This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan with Chuang and Noel in the studio this morning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be taking a look at how the MCO has impacted the legal sector with Salim Bashe, president of the Malaysian Bar. But right now, let's talk about fixed income markets. Riveting stuff, but important. Global central banks have been under pressure to do more to manage the impact of the pandemic on their respective economies. And with this week, has been particularly busy with the Bank of Japan, the US Federal Reserve and the ECB, the European Central Bank, all meeting. However, as the central banks look at their options, which includes cutting rates, what will the spillover effects be on fixed income markets and possibly even currencies? And is fixed income really a safer asset class in times like this? For more on this, we speak to Jesse Liu, Chief Investment Officer for ASEAN Fixed Income at Principal Asset Management. Jesse, are you there on the line with us?
Yes. Hi. Good morning.
Hi, Jesse. So let's talk about this now. With global central banks racing to lower interest rates to all-time lows, what does that mean for fixed income markets in ASEAN and also, in particular, Malaysia?
Hi. Thank you for the question. So normally, this would typically result in lower yields for bonds. So in this current scenario, we would expect bonds to generally perform better, with the short-term high-grade bonds outperforming the long-term low-grade bonds.
So what would this mean? I mean, right now what we're seeing, there's a flight to quality with a shift of funds from emerging markets to developed markets.
Well, like the previous economic downturns, US Treasury, Japanese samurai bonds, Swiss bonds tend to attract safe haven flows from emerging market countries. And the situation today is actually no different. As global investors, they try to shun away from uncertainty and into safe assets in the world. But having said that, this time around is actually quite unique. While we saw bond yields in Asia rise during a sell-off in March in 2020, markets also witnessed a sell-off in U.S. treasuries due to higher demand of U.S. dollar liquidity from global corporates. So the U.S. treasury actually sold off in March too because of liquidity. The liquidity environment was only improved once the U.S. Fed restarted its QE program. So as well as also extending bilateral swap lines to major central banks to help alleviate US dollar crunch in the markets that we're facing.
So Jesse, with this funds flow development, do you still see the exodus of foreign money from these shores, and specifically in terms of the MGS foreign fund holdings?
Well, let me just put it this way. Highly weighted sovereign bonds in an index will probably be vulnerable to market stress scenario. For example, if I were to refer you to the JP Morgan Emerging Market Local Currency Bond Index. So if I were to look in that context, countries that are probably more susceptible to outflows may include those like Brazil, Indonesia, Mexico, Poland, Russia, so on and so forth. I'm not trying to say that the other countries are not subject to this volatility, this outflow, but the most vulnerable ones would be those countries that I mentioned earlier. So if that's a sell-off, these central banks in these countries would have to facilitate a currency conversion for global investors to exit. And in this process would generally create a negative pressure on foreign exchange rates.
What about Malaysia?
Well, as I said, Malaysia probably will be similar. We'll experience similar experiences like other EM countries. But what I want to emphasize is that it really depends how much investors are invested worldwide in EM. So those countries which are really heavy, if I were to refer to an index, would be Brazil, Indonesia, Mexico, Poland, South Africa, Thailand, those countries. Malaysia would have an impact too, but I think it will be to a lesser extent.
So Jesse, do you have, as we talk about central banks across the globe, what's your view on OPR cuts in Malaysia this year? What do you think there?
The house view is that there's still going to be one to two cuts with the May coming to about the May meeting. Probably we will have about 25 basis cut. So that's our general house view.
And with that in mind, what is your investment strategy with regards to fixed income in this region?
So for the past 2 months, the bond universe with the highest volatility in Asia or ASEAN was generally in the high yield spectrum and also long maturity bonds. Given that global economies are still on a lockdown due to COVID-19, I will be cautious on credit, which may result in aggravating further risk off in the bond markets. So hence our strategy is to remain overweight on high grade credits and keep our volatility or duration at neutral level.
More generally on the Malaysian scene, Jesse, what does the fiscal situation mean in terms of the amount of firepower for Tengku Zafrul as Minister of Finance to help our ailing businesses in the in the country?
Well, I think in terms of firepower, they do have a lot of leeway in terms of managing this. For example, we have already seen that was announced, 260 billion, of which many various ways of trying to alleviate this stress in the markets. So I think the government has still some flexibility in terms of still raising some funds, fiscal spending to support the economy. But I think what is prudent and important right now is to make sure that whatever has been rolled out is actually impacting the economy in a positive way before they move into the second phase of thinking of how much more fiscal that needs to be pumped into the economy. What is very important, in my view, really, is that we have to make sure that this is done prudently, because there's a whole lot of money that needs to be spent to let's say if we don't get it right, really go out of hand. So it is very important to make sure that all those packages that have been rolled out so far works well. And as time goes by, we tweak those packages and make sure it does impact the economy in a positive way that the government is looking at.
Well, just still on Malaysia, are you concerned over a potential sovereign downgrade in relation to what you just spoke about?
Yeah. So if I look into the APAC region, countries that we have observed having a credit rating outlook downgrade, or actually their credit rating being downgrade, includes, say, Australia, Indonesia, Thailand, Hong Kong. Countries in the Middle East are also not spared, because a lot of these countries are reliant on oil to balance their fiscal budget. So having said that, we expect actually a whole lot of countries around the world are going to experience lower credit profile due to increase or material increase in government spending to combat COVID-19. The good news for Malaysia is that S&P has already reaffirmed Malaysia's credit rating, but Fitch has already put Malaysia on negative outlook. I presume it will be based on the same reasons, right? Anticipation of material spending by the government. But would we be surprised in terms of any adjustment in Malaysia's sovereign rating? I don't think so. I think it's really a widespread global phenomenon right now. What is important to note is that Malaysia's economy continues to be well diversified in a way, and the government is prudent on its fiscal spending, like I mentioned earlier. So in that sense, I do believe Malaysia's credit outlook, like the majority of other countries in the world, is very much reliant on how fast it can come out of the COVID-19 lockdown. So let's say if I look at credit, Malaysia's credit rating. So if there's a downgrade, it probably would have an impact on capital costs like any other country in the world. But since credit downgrade is more widespread globally, I think Malaysia's credit rating is really much in the safe zone within the IG space or investment grade space. So I don't think the downgrade would have really large impact on bond yields.
Jesse, with the ringgit at 4.36 to the dollar, what do you think Bank Negara's stance is to the ringgit? Do you think they'll advocate for a looser ringgit or a tighter ringgit?
I personally think that they would advocate a more stable ringgit, in the sense whereby I think what we need to ensure right now is that the ringgit continues to be very stable, and it should not disrupt our export markets in that sense. So it is very important to maintain stability there. As the previous questions that you asked earlier, I think that probably if I look at the whole entire EM world, there might be some weakening in EM in general. Largely because we might see some downgrades here or there, but generally that's more of an EM phenomenon.
Jesse, do you have a house view for the ringgit this year?
That's a tough question, but I think the ringgit is hard. It's hard to predict EM currencies as a whole, let alone ringgit. If I would say, I think at this point in time, the ringgit seems to be trading at its kind of like a fair range, went to a high of 4.45, now trading at 4.30 plus. So I think that looks like the range so far, given the height of the COVID-19 crisis. So I would say, if things start to taper down, we look at about 430 to 440, that kind of range.
Last question here, Jesse. There was a lot of talk last year about Malaysia's position in the Russell World Bond Index. Do you have any concerns about our position there? I think the review is middle this year.
No, generally. I think if there's anything, probably Malaysia will be continue to be placed under the review. That's my worst case scenario. I think the government has, central bank has done well to try to address those concerns as highlighted by Russell FTSE. So at the moment, I don't see any changes on that front.
All right, Jesse, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. That was Jesse Liu, Chief Investment Officer for ASEAN Fixed Income at Principal Asset Management, with quite a deep dive there into fixed income, not just in the region, but taking a look at Malaysia. I think this, the World Bond Index actually was something we were talking about last year, and it seems to have taken a backtrack to all the COVID-19 and pandemic news right now.
I suppose we could take heart to the fact that Malaysia, he doesn't think Malaysia will be as bad as the other emerging markets, right? He probably reckons we are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, in terms of fund outflows. But, you know, the fact that most houses in the region, in the country, reckon Bank Negara will loosen another once or twice this year. Overnight policy rates are about 2.5%. So another 25 basis point cut is another 20, takes it to 2.25. And if there's another one from there, it's 2%. I'm not sure when the last time bank interest rates were this low. So it's kind of like a reflection of how weak the policymakers think the economy is going to be.
Yeah, I think I read, this was on The Edge's Instagram a few days ago, that CGS-CIMB was looking at even a 0.75% cut this year to the OPR. But of course, these are all just forecasts. What Bank Negara actually does is really within only the purview of the central banker. Now, we're going into a few messages right now, and then the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin. When we come back, a look at how the MCO is affecting the legal sector with Salim Bashir, president of the Malaysian Bar. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.